sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Ahead of the Fed rate decision, U.S. stocks have the worst week in months. Oil crashes to a level not seen since 2008. The U.S. dollar weakens even as wholesale inflation picks up and leveraged ETFs under regulatory scrutiny. All this and much more on episode number 442 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, it was an awful week, wasn't it? Terrible for stocks, terrible for oil, terrible for junk bonds. We're going to talk all about this and much more today. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for joining me for this episode. We're approaching December 13th, 2015, towards the end of the year. And there is definitely a sense of concern out there. And whether it's due to just one thing or the other, clearly there are three or so things that we're going to touch upon today that have been really concerning investors, bringing up the overall volatility and the panic over what happened with junk bonds towards the end of last week is something we really need to talk about. But let's start the show and let's start talking a little bit about some of the things that went on in the economic front and what to expect for next week. We'll get that out of the way, kind of go through some of those important points, because clearly some of those are going to shape the markets for the weeks to come. We did see that retail sales improved ever so slightly, while the November number was a bit short of the projections that analysts had, and the analyst consensus of about 0.3% came in at about 0.2%. It was definitely better than October, which was only at 0.1%. And when we look at core retail sales, which is the retail sales, we take out auto, gas, and home improvement purchases, it did rise by 0.4%. So clearly the concern over the pricing of oil bringing down some market indicators and economic indicators is clearly right there in retail sales. Now, at the same time, consumers were a little bit more positive than they were last month. There were some gains to the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index. It ended November at 91.3, and the preliminary December reading was at 91.8. So that was a little bit better. On the other hand, we did see that producer prices, these are the wholesale prices that companies pay for goods. So the CPI, which is inflation on the retail area, you know, kind of at the end prices, what we pay for goods that they call are finished. Well, we have now PPI out, which is the prices that actually are at the wholesale level before they actually get produced. And those were actually only 0.3%. They were at 0.3%, which was a little bit better. Now, if you look at a year-over-year basis, we're talking about headline was still down 1.1%. So we're seeing that there still is deflationary pressures, but the most recent one was up slightly, so that was better. So you kind of got a mixed message right there, right? We got the mixed message that, yeah, prices are increasing even though the dollar is gaining value, and that usually has the effect of bringing down overall wholesale prices. But at the same time, when we look at it over a period of time, like a year, we're seeing that it is actually still pretty depressed. So that's something concerning. Now, in terms of markets, we did see that there was a few things. Oil and junk bonds and a few other things that probably were concerning investors. But towards the end of the week, the sell-off really intensified on that news with junk bonds. Again, we'll get to that in a second. But the Dow lost about 3.25% for the week. S&P down about 3.75%. The NASDAQ was down a whopping 4% for the week. Pretty intense moves, clearly, on Friday. Now, coming up next week, we have Monday, China releasing its new data on its industrial output. Now, we'll see what happens there, because we have seen that the overall trend in China has been towards slowing on almost every single economic number they put out. Even in the face of continuing and ongoing stimulus efforts, that keep on being implemented almost on a weekly basis. New things that crop up to try to prop the markets and do what they can to help the economy each and every week. It seems that there's a new item that they send out. None of it seems to be working. So that tells you that obviously the economy in China is a lot weaker than anticipated. Right now, clearly a sub 7% GDP print that we're looking at. So we have a couple of earnings coming out, Navistar, Verifone on Monday, but we're going to also see on Tuesday the CPI. Now, we do see all the time the PPI first that we just mentioned, and the CPI follows. So inflation numbers will come out Tuesday, not much in the way of any significant earnings. On Wednesday, big day, very big day, December 16th at 2 p.m. Tune in because we're going to see that the Federal Reserve is releasing their latest policy decision, latest policy rate decision. And pretty much everybody expects it's going to be a hike. But 80% or 80, I think 87% actually right now of those polled believe that there's going to be a rate hike. Those in the analyst community, there'll be a rate hike at this meeting. The big debate rages on over whether there's going to be or there won't be, or will be a rate hike in the face of all this market turmoil. Now, if you remember something, this is exactly what happened the last time the Fed was expected to increase rates in September or so. The markets had a meltdown, freaked out. All sorts of things came together. The dollar was actually rising at that point. And the Fed decided, you know, we'll hold off till the end of the year. Now, more than those that expected it, back in September, it was maybe in the 60 or 70% range for the expectations for a rate hike. And now we're in the high 80s. And the commentary that's going along with this is that if the Fed does not increase rates, they're going to lose credibility. That they're going to be signaling that there's something much worse out there, because not only did they postpone it in September and make a really good case of why they're going to raise it in December, but now if they back off this time, two things. The reason why they'll lose some of their credibility is because people will look at it as that they are really being swayed by market action. And the fact is that they've been talking about this. Almost every Fed speaker has been talking about the potential for a rate hike, how they support it. So we're going to see that at 2 o'clock. And there's going to be a subsequent press conference after, which will obviously create a lot more volatility with markets and a lot more concern, depending on what they say. Now, that day also, we're going to be seeing November housing starts, building permits, industrial production. And we're going to have some important information from companies that do have a good pulse on the global economy. In particular, FedEx will be reporting their earnings that day. We're also going to see Oracle and Cintas. Cintas is a uniform company that provides uniforms for all sorts of industries. And as they, even though it's maybe a minor issue, it's a good data point to see what's going on with hiring, and particularly in the manufacturing area. But FedEx definitely is one that many people watch, because FedEx gives you the real pulse of what's happening on a global basis when it comes to transportation and goods. If you see that one area may be showing a lot of increase in the shipments and others don't, or if everybody's picking up, well, that's all very good to see, because it's almost a real-time number they're going to provide with their outlook in terms of the global shipping business. Now, on Thursday, the conference board is going to provide us leading indicators. Of course, new initial claims, which have been coming in very strong, in other words, a week, I should say, depending on how you want to look at this. Initial claims being new claims for unemployment. If they're strong or if they're low, that means that employment is good. And we've been seeing a lot of good employment numbers recently. We're going to see the earnings from companies like Winnebago, Carnival, Red Hat, and Scholastic. And then on Friday, we're going to see CarMax and Darden and Lennar. Lennar being the big one in the housing industry and the sector that is going to report what's going on with the housing market. So we're going to have to pay attention to that. So there's a lot of very important sub-market and economic information that's really going to be pouring out and providing us a good amount of insight into the markets. Not to mention, of course, the big Fed number that comes out and decision that comes out in the mid part of the week. So we're going to have to stay tuned for all of that. So I guess we got to really dig into what's ahead for the next week or so. And clearly, as we talked about, there is at least one item, which will be the Fed, but two other items that clearly, I got to tell you something, really shook markets this week. Oil, yes. No question about it that the price of oil has been dropping. And in fact, it's to a point that we're seeing levels not seen since 2008. I mean, we're talking pretty rough. Back then, the low was about 30 and a quarter or so back in 2008, sank to 36.50 this week. It's down about 10% as OPEC pretty much abandoned a price target. And that happened almost over a week ago, so a bit of a delayed reaction to this. Now, we saw the U.S. dollar sink, and the rig count was the lowest in like 5 years. However, production is still near a high, and that's causing additional amounts of inventory to be added to the already overflowing inventory. And even as we're seeing rig counts go down, the overwhelming amount of concern that the pumping will still continue, the drilling will continue. We'll see that OPEC is not only abandoning their pricing structure, and they're still pumping and putting oil onto the market. So what's happened is that it's just a perfect storm for oil. Now, fortunately, the dollar didn't really move a lot higher. As a matter of fact, it came down last week, and that probably helped oil a little bit. That's the first thing. Second thing is the Fed. We talked about that a moment ago. But behind the scenes, what really spooked investors, particularly towards the end of the week last week, was the enormous, massive, just incredible sell-off in the junk bond markets. Now, junk bonds are, there's kind of a range. So when we look at investment grade, if you've heard that kind of terminology, that's usually triple B or better on the corporate side. So we're talking about corporate bonds here. So triple B or better is considered investment grade bonds or high grade bonds. And you can get a variety of levels above that. Below triple B is considered high yield, below investment grade, junk. Now, again, there's a big range, right? You can go from triple B to B. You can have triple C. You can have C. These are all various ratings that are put on the bonds from the rating services as to their indication of potential payment probability in the future, the ability to pay their interest and their overall pay back the bond at the maturity. So the lower down you go the ladder of ratings, the greater the potential is for the bond to default sometime in the future. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to default, but at least it gives you that range. So a triple A, which may be, sovereign debt, you may have it on a couple different companies out there. Double A, a lot more, the big companies that have good cash flow that can pay their interest and the maturing value of the bond. These are all these ranges that are looked at. Now, since the Fed has been buying a tremendous amount of bonds, since you can't get any decent rate of interest in a bank, and investors are very hungry for yield because it's, a few years ago when you can get 4% in a CD or 4% or 3% even in a money market, people would leave money parked there and they would collect their money. And maybe some of the people who are very risk averse would leave it there and use that as their main investment and live off of the income. Now, the same people that did that years ago can't do that anymore. Right? So what are they doing? They have to look elsewhere. They need to make up that interest. They need to make sure they don't drive down their principal because there's no interest on their savings account. So what they've done is they've gone elsewhere. They put money into the markets, into maybe some dividend-producing stocks. They look for yield. They look at a whole range of yields. And as interest rates have been coming down, they have to go up the ladder of junk or up the ladder of riskiness to get decent yield. And we saw that the junk bond market was getting really frothy there for a while. I've talked about it for a long time, but yet nothing really happened. there was a lot of talk by many people that were very concerned about what was going on in the overall bond market, and as and if interest rates moved higher, what would happen with all these areas. And junk bonds or below investment grade bonds were much more illiquid than other bonds. And because there was just a lack of general liquidity with that, and many of the junk bonds were focused in the oil area, these companies would issue a tremendous amount of debt to fund their drilling and their production process. And because oil prices dropped, their rating dropped as well, because they may not be able to pay the interest back to investors, or maybe even the principal back to investors one day, if there is a prolonged period of low cost of oil. So they started to kind of melt down a little bit and get a little bit, you know, questionable, and lower ratings and liquidity was a question. Well, on Friday, something happened that is probably one of the worst things you could ever say to an investor. Probably the thing that you always say, do not ever say to an investor. The thing that when you say it causes investors to panic, causes investors to run and immediately withdraw money. It's very simple. When you tell an investor they cannot have their money, they freak out. Capital controls. Why is it that when a capital control like we saw in Greece recently go into play, where they could only take out a certain amount of money, the lines were around the block at banks and ATMs? Because when you're told you can't have your money, people freak out and they start selling all sorts of assets. So the Third Avenue Focused Credit Fund, which has been around for a very long time, halted redemptions and closed their fund. Halted redemptions. In other words, they said you can't have your money because their liquidity was so tight that they're unable to sell the bonds to meet the demands of the redemptions requested. And now that sent a shiver down the entire junk bond market, and you saw that every single fund in the sector and many bonds, bond funds that have even, you know, a reasonable amount of lower grade risks, bonds in their portfolios, really got hit. And now when that happens, they start getting price inefficiencies. And with price inefficiencies, you get illiquidity. And when then you get redemptions. And then the cycle just starts feeding upon itself. So now you have all these corporate bonds that are being priced very low because the redemptions are coming. And what's happening is that as you get people to have forced selling in these various funds and hedge funds and mutual funds and ETFs, etc., it gets worse and worse, and it feeds upon itself. The more redemptions you have, the more liquidity problems you have. The more liquidity problems you have, the more if you need to get out, you'll take a lower price. And the lower price then prompts people to freak out because now all of a sudden they're losing more money and they want more money back. And because now you have this redemption situation where they halted redemptions, and another fund actually went out, also a hedge fund, closed its doors that invests in similar types of debt instruments. Now the news media takes a hold of it and people start freaking out. And that starts to spread. Because now all of a sudden people are saying, wait, I can't get my money out of that. I need to free up some cash. I need to find some other places that I can actually access my capital. What's next? Should I be selling some of the quality bonds that I have? Because what happens if all of a sudden this spreads into even quality bonds, maybe a AA rated bond? What happens if the bond market, with the Fed possibly raising rates next week and on a rate hiking path over the next year, if this is what they're thinking, what if interest rates go up and it is finally the time that bond prices adjust back to maybe not normal levels, but you know, we see rates go up and bond prices go down. Maybe now's the time to start taking out money with all of the news going on about what's happening with the below grade bonds and, of course, with the Fed. So this cycle is feeding upon itself. And that caused a great degree of concern in the markets. Then you also have oil dropping. Then you have, with oil dropping, the subsequent reaction in the bonds of oil sector related companies. Their bonds are dropping too. The potential for further rate cuts on their ratings is obvious. The more time that goes on with oil being below, let's call it $50 a barrel. So it just keeps on going and going and going. And this is a negative sentiment loop, if you will, that continues. And this is what causes a big problem. And that's why you saw the massive sell-off in the markets. The three things. You saw oil come down. You saw junk bonds, panic really happening within the junk bond market. And the Fed potentially raising rates next week. On top of all the other things that are going on around the world in terms of the economy slowing down, the dollar turning. Now, one of the things that's interesting about what happened with the dollar, we've talked about this many times, the correlation between dollar up, stocks up in the U.S., which is a little bit weird, because usually if you have that happen anywhere else in the world, that wouldn't be the case. Usually what you see is the yen dropping in value and stocks going higher because a lot of the companies that deal in exports will do a lot better. Same thing in Europe. They're trying to drop the euro down to make their prices much more competitive around the world. So why is it that when the dollar moved up, we saw stocks move up? Well, a lot of it has to do with a trade that's been in play, which is borrow by selling the euro, borrow by selling the yen, put it into dollars into U.S. stocks. And that trade, as you see, even a slight bit of turn about the dollar, and the dollar starts moving down, maybe because of the weak PPI number on a year-over-year basis, although it was strong recently, maybe on the industrial numbers, manufacturing dipped into contraction zone, whatever the reason is, because it's not about the Fed. The Fed is going to potentially raising rates, according to 87% of the survey. So the dollar should be actually holding or going higher. So a lot of things are getting a little wacky here. Mario Draghi's flip-flop that he had last week on the euro, a lot of concern about that. So what's happening is you have these massive trades on one side of a currency that are actually going into stocks, and as that currency changes, all of a sudden people have to bail out of those positions, and stocks go down, then you have the junk bond fiasco. So all of this kind of is helping this perfect storm of what happened just last week. Now this is on the heels of a 350-point turnaround of the Dow Jones Industrial Average just a week ago. Remember that on Friday after Mario Draghi flip-flop, we got the jobs report out. All of a sudden, the Dow vaulted 350 points. And then we took it all back plus-plus this week. Because, again, we're seeing that there's a lot of weakness and a lot of constrained liquidity. That's another big problem here. With many of the companies in the U.S. markets in particular buying back their stocks over the last couple of years, there's a lot less stock and less shares on the market. A lot less shares will help to create a very much more pronounced swings, a much greater degree of movement because you have more people chasing, either on the sell side or on the buy side, fewer shares. That's a big concern. That's what's going on right now. The lack of liquidity, even though there is liquidity due to all of the central bank maneuvering, stimulus efforts, etc., there is an undertone that it's being pulled a little bit. And if, in fact, the Fed does raise rates, a lot of liquidity leaves the markets. So that gives you a bit of a wrap of what happened last week. The big question is going to be, what's going to happen moving forward into next week? Are we going to see these oversold conditions that have arrived on Friday again, as we saw a few weeks ago, turn around on a dime and start moving higher? Well, it all depends. Are we going to see that if oil starts to stabilize here at all, that we'll see that the junk bond market will stabilize as well, and that will send a much better cue to investors about stocks and bonds overall? That's going to be the big issue. We already saw that some of these companies, particularly in the oil sector, that hold a good amount of the junk bond universe, and all you have to do is look at the holdings of the ETF's symbol HYG or JNK, and you'll see that there is a tremendous amount of holdings in the oil sector. Now, many of these companies are starting to say, well, wait a minute, we have to cut our dividend. We saw last week, for example, that Kinder Morgan cut their dividend by about 75%. The actual reaction of the stock was very positive after that cut, realizing, investors finally realized, hey, you know, we are seeing companies do something proactively here to conserve cash. They are well aware. They're restructuring. They're doing things that need to be. And this long and very protracted drop that we saw over the last year or so on many of these companies, it's possible that some of them are getting to a point of bottoming, especially if they're taking these very aggressive tactics in order to conserve cash and to keep their balance sheets intact. Freeport-McMoRan last week, the biggest copper producer in the world, cut their dividend entirely. And at first it was questionable. The stock was moving around and there was a lot of concern about that. It moved up like 10% the day after. Now, on Friday, everything dropped. But still, these companies are being very proactive. And I find that to be a very good thing, especially at the current prices that they're at, which are possibly bargain basement prices if, in fact, we see any kind of stabilization in the commodity complex anytime soon. Now, will we? Won't we? Big question. Will we finally see that maybe the dollar is not surging and will hold on? And even though there is a real drop in demand overall, particularly from China, that there will be some stabilization in this area? Interesting. And really, if you think about it, how much do you have to lose by taking a small position in some of these names that have been just obliterated, especially into a new year where oftentimes there's a rotation where you sell the good stuff and you buy the bad stuff, just to make it really easy, just to make that, you know, very untechnical and an easy way to look at it. There's oftentimes a rotation that you'll see, a rebalancing process where you're going to be in and you're required to be in certain areas of the market. So maybe you're an S&P 500 type of mutual fund or hedge fund or an ETF. And ETFs trade much more in line. But still, what you want to do is possibly take some of your money from the winners and put them into the losers, because you have to rebalance the portfolio back to a level that is consistent with an index, at least, or your strategy. So there is some areas. We picked up a little bit. I tweeted it last week. We picked up right before the dividend cut announcement some Kinder Morgan. That's worked out pretty well so far. Freeport, I don't know. I mean, that stock has just been all over the place. And it seems that while they did cut their dividend and they actually cut production, there's no end in sight in how far this thing is going down. Copper even picked up a little bit last week and towards the end of the week and still didn't see anything great there. Now, one of the things that you did notice is that retail sales did, as we mentioned, pick up from last month, but they're still not spectacular. I mean, a 0.2, a 0.3? Yeah, that's not good. What's going on? I mean, you know, we were all told to believe that the cut in the price of oil is essentially a gigantic tax benefit. It's a gigantic stimulus package. That was when oil was at 50. When it was 40, hey, this is really good because consumers will have a lot more money to spend. When it went below 40, that must mean that there's even that much more money to spend by consumers. But yet we're not finding that there is any major amount of sentiment shift or an increase in the overall spending that consumers are doing in terms of any of the retail areas outside of gas stations and things like that, because obviously we know those are dropped. So you take those out, and we're not seeing that there's a major increase in retail sales either. We already know that last month there was major warnings from the big box retailers like Macy's, which I got to tell you a story about, by the way. And we did see that many of the other ones have cut their forecast moving forward. So consumers are seemingly buying electronics, we've seen, to a degree. They're spending money in different areas, doing a lot more comparison shopping and price comparison and buying things like on an Amazon or online sites. But still, the overall trend is not good. And I wonder what's happening. Are they increasing their savings? Maybe. But we don't see that in the savings rate either. So where's the money going? What happens? Maybe it's as simple as maybe it is true when they said that when oil was $100, $110, $120 a barrel, that doesn't affect the consumer very much. When they said that, well, when oil gets to $50 a barrel, wow, that's really good for the consumer. I think maybe the reality is that consumers do what consumers do. They spend the money that they have. They buy the things that they need. And if they don't need anything because they're stocked up for whatever reason, Maybe prices came down. They bulked up on things. Well, retail sales won't move that much. So it is kind of interesting to see that retail sales haven't done a great deal. Now, many of the analysts that you hear and you listen to have talked about how, well, it's coming. It's coming. Retail sales will be picking up. Just you wait and see. Now, this is the discussion for the last 6 months, so I'm not quite sure how long we're supposed to wait for this. I would be very concerned about many of the retail companies and just watch and look at their stocks. Like, I mean, we know that Walmart has been just decimated. We know that the teen apparel area, a lot of them potentially even going bankrupt. Big box retailers are just horrible. So keep a watch on many of those names. Now, I need to tell you a quick story. So now, maybe I'm a little nuts or maybe I'm the norm. I don't know. But I don't like going to department stores to buy clothes very often because I find it a little bit difficult to find what I want. Not because of size, not because it's just the organization, but nonetheless, I wanted a particular brand of shirt that I have a couple of that fit really nicely, that look kind of cool, these Talias. So I thought maybe, you know what? Macy's has these. I looked online. Yep, they have them. That's who sells them. I'm going to go to Macy's. I'm going to go pick up a couple of shirts. How hard can this be? I'm going to go to Macy's. I'm going to go in the men's department. And I'm going to go find the shirts on the rack. Maybe I'll find a couple of my size. I'll buy them. That would be great. I'm excited. So I get in my car, I drive to the mall, and I get into Macy's. The first thing I do is I walk into the men's department, and my eyes are burning from the cologne. Obviously somebody's been spraying gobs of cologne in the air. Okay, whatever. I start looking around in the sections. I see, okay, there's Ralph Lauren, there's Guess, there's a Michael Kors section, Tommy Bahama. I'm like, wait a minute. So I don't remember it being so segregated, having all these various designers segregated by section before. But okay, I'm still looking. Then I start getting frustrated. I can't find these shirts anywhere. I'm saying, well, why not put all the men's dress shirts in one area, all the slacks in a different area, the pants over there, the denims in another one, and mix it? Nope. They have to do it by designers. Now you got to go look somehow. It's not alphabetical. You got to go find the designer you want, if you happen to know, by the way, what designer that you want to actually shop. Otherwise, you got to go to each one of these almost individual stores, the Ralph Lauren shop at Macy's, the Michael Kors, you know, men's clothing at Macy's. And you got to look through each one of these to see if you like anything. Then you got to find your size. It's just the organization was horrible. Epic waste of time trying to find what I wanted. So I finally go over and I said, can you help me, please? Blood pressure is really up at this point, by the way. I went to somebody and said, can you help me? What can I help you with, sir? I'm looking for these Talia shirts. Oh, yes, they're over here. Somebody else chimes in. Nope. They pulled them off the floor. What do you mean? They were here just a couple days ago. Yeah, but they pulled them off the floor. Well, why did they do that? I said. Well, they're thinking about not selling them anymore. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Well, they're going to be replaced by something else, whatever. So meanwhile, I go to Macy's. I have to find out that, yeah, they have them in the back, but they can't sell them. They just pulled them off the floor. So I'm kind of bummed. I walk around a few things. I find a few other things. Nothing's good. It's So I go up. I got a couple pairs of socks that I figured I'll buy. And they were reasonably priced. And I said, okay, I'll buy these. And I'll just leave at this point. I'm very frustrated. I'll find another place that sells these or online or something like that. I'll be done with this. I'm not coming back to a department store ever again. This is the last time. So I said to the woman, says, how was your shopping experience? The cashier says to me, how was your shopping experience? Not very good. Oh, really? Yeah, I said, I came really for one thing, and I thought I'd be here, and I told her the story. She says, well, I can't believe it. They're right there. I'm like, where? She goes, they were right over there in that rack. I said, no, they're not. I was told by the manager they're not there anymore. And we went through this whole thing. She goes, you know, you're right. They're not there. She says, but maybe they're in the back. I said, okay. She says, you know what? You're so frustrated. I'm going to go in the back. I'm going to see if I could round these up. So I wait like 15 minutes at the cashier. I was trying to be nice. I was so close to walking out. She comes back with like three or four shirts from this brand. They were not at all what I wanted in terms of the colors and all that. And I said, you know, thank you very much. I really appreciate the extra effort. I did. But you know what? what a waste of time. And I can't imagine why anybody would go to a department store, unless they really, well, Macy's men's shop, let's just put it that way, to buy something because it's so disorganized. And then you go to look for a shirt, maybe a dress shirt that you'd wear with a suit. And now you got to look through a pile of unorganized sizes to try to find your size. It's impossible. They have every other size that you want, but mine in this, so I have to go to a different bin somewhere else and find it. Terrible. Macy's and these guys, no wonder why their sales are lagging, because they probably piss off the consumer so much that wants to just go buy a certain item, maybe that they're just looking for something general, and they have to spend so much time in the store being frustrated, because even if they found what they wanted, the sizes may not be there. Ugh, miserable experience. So hopefully these guys will do something about that, because they're really doing themselves a very big disservice by keeping the organization as they are, not to mention the cologne levels at a point that's almost creates unbreathable and eye irritants atmosphere that they have. So I don't know, maybe you've had the same experience, or maybe not. Maybe I'm just a Looney Tune, really out of touch or something like that. Or maybe I'm just so enthralled with shopping online for things where there's easy return policies that I simply, you know, have a low tolerance for this. Or maybe, I don't know. But, you know, let me know what you think about your situation. You can always write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Maybe this is the reason why these big box retailers are having such a difficult time. I don't know. Anyway, love to hear your story, what your take is on this situation. I feel better. Thank you for listening. What's next? Let's see. I think that it's important to talk about, if you recall, we had talked over the last month or so about some of the things to do to protect portfolios. We talked about how to hedge. Remember, we talked about that in depth, actually, on the November 15th episode. That's number 438. If you haven't listened to it, go back and make sure to listen to that. We had a summary and a refresher on what was going on. And we said, you know, maybe there's some opportunity for you to hedge out some of the risk here, and maybe it's a wise thing to do, and how to actually hedge it, how to actually utilize some of the things that are out there, whether it's options, ETFs, in order to hedge your portfolio. And we provided a bit of a game plan. Now, that was at a time when markets were, you know, getting to a point of starting to recover and then move down a bit. It was getting more volatile again from that big, massive drop down that we saw in September. And what really I think is important to recognize here is that back then, there was massive oversold conditions that we saw on several of our different indicators, two in particular that we watch quite often. As a matter of fact, I'll put the key reversal indicator on the website. It's currently reading after the close on Friday of a -4, meaning a pretty significant oversold reading. Now, -5, -6 is really like, hey, let's just jump in here for at least a trade on the day and see if we can get a pop, because that is a level that is very significant. You don't see it that often. But there's a couple other things that come into play. And one of them is an arrow, what we look at as our arrow algorithm, and also a subsequent look at an indicator that we look at, which is aileron. So there's a few different things we look at. But the aileron, actually, and the arrow too right now, but the aileron in particular is at a pretty deep level of oversold. And when you see that the key reversal indicator, which combines a few different key important ingredients, when you look at that, things like also the Spearman indicator, which I've talked about many times over the years, when you look at put call ratios, McClellan index, you look at the, all of these together. Well, what does it show? Well, right now we're showing that there is a pretty good oversold reading on markets. Now, that markets closed close to the low on Friday is a bit suspect of what's going to happen towards the beginning of this week, because oftentimes when you see that there is a major flow into or out of equities on the end of a week, well, you can have a rough start to the next day, or for that matter, not the end of the week, any day. You can have a rough start to the next day because you still have a lot of sell orders that are going to pile through possibly at the open. Now, last week we saw that, or last time where this happened, And I brought to you this whole idea of, you know, let's look at some stocks that may be in a very significant level of price that may get crushed. And who knows if we're going to see one of those Mondays following the Friday, if you know what I'm saying, those Mondays that crack very significantly. And, you know, what happens to any of these stocks if they do flush? And I gave you pricing points. If you remember that, I gave you a lot of stocks, about 25 or 30 stocks, and all these different pricing points. So you can listen to the podcasts and the episodes that we talked about on there. That was all the way from episode 440, episode 441, a few different ideas, but also 438 in particular. Now, the levels that we talked about were for the S&P 500 as well. We talked about how, hey, you know what? You need to watch the 2073 number, the 2041, and 2008, the level 2008. Now, we did come and hold for a little while there, that 2073. It broke down. It did crash right through the 2041, and it did clip 2008 on Friday and bounce up a little bit to close at about 2012. So that's an important support line. Now, if you recall my discussion about this, and I put these charts up many times on the show notes for the Disciplined Investor, go over to the disciplinedinvestor.com, and I think it was episode number key levels. That was episode number 440. Look at the chart for the S&P there. You'll see these lines that I drew in utilizing a variety of different algorithms that we have created. And if you'll notice that 2008 number, I said that was a really important one. I said there was a good amount of support going back into September, end of August, September, October. And there's also other lines of support there utilizing this metric that we have in late October. And I said that's going to be a key area. We're right there right now. The big question is, what happens next? Well, if we see a rally, we may see a rally up to about 2041. And if we see this fail, the next stop that I can see, there's a couple of interim stops right below 2000. 2000, obviously, a round number is a key level. That's always important to look at. But 1957 is the next line that I see as key support that we could see this drop down to. Now, again, there's a couple of interim, it doesn't have to happen all at once. There's a couple of key levels that are in there on the way. Again, about 1995, you'll see something there. But 1957 marked that. 2008 marked that. You may see a flush lower if things don't settle out early in the morning on Monday. If it does hold there, I would look at that to possibly look for a contra trade and move to the plus side and buy long. But on the other hand, you know, you need to look at the overall market and the sentiment and see how things are playing out. But keep that and look for if there is going to be a big flush in the next few days. Look to buy down significantly. Put some limit orders down on some stocks much lower than they are now. And again, we talked about this in a variety of different episodes. The levels. I gave you exact levels in a discussion that we had over the last month. So hopefully you'll listen to those, and I'm going to force you to listen to those and find out what those levels are. By the way, once you listen to those and you find out what to put those in and kind of leave those orders on and hit something good, do me a favor, make sure to mention to a friend. Tell somebody, hey, I listened to this guy Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor podcast, something you should listen to. Especially coming into the beginning of the year as things are getting a little bit wonky with markets, maybe they want some advice, some guidance. And make sure you turn them on to the Disciplined Investor podcast if you like what you're hearing, because I think you do. Now, we're going to end the show with a discussion about what's going on with the levered ETF industry. Now, if you recall on many times on this show and on DH Unplugged, I have talked about there are definitely some ETFs that you have to be concerned about. These levered ETFs that people think are very simple, that they're a two-time or three-time long or two-time or three-time short market or VIX or whatever it may be, that you could just buy them and kind of, you know, if you think the things are going, you know, down over time, well, you buy the short and you kind of just let them sit there and do their thing. That is okay for some funds. For example, the inverse to the Hang Seng, the FXI, which is the Hang Seng Index, the inverse to that, I haven't seen a lot of degradation that's really a problem, even with all the bouncing around that's had. As a matter of fact, we just took off some on Friday for about, I think, close to an 18% profit recently. We held that and built into that position and added to that position on the short side. through Yang, Y-A-N-G. There's also Ying, which is Y-I-N-G. And that is a multiple levered ETF. And I, again, I haven't seen much degradation in that one. But there's other ones out there that have just awful, just absolutely awful. And the longer you hold them, the worse off you are. Well, now there's a proposal that was issued Friday by the SEC that could really cause some problems for this industry after warnings from the likes of BlackRock's Larry Fink and Wall Street's regulators, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. So these are like mutual funds, these exchange-traded funds that are managed from companies like ProShares and Direction. They use derivatives inside of the portfolios and try to track daily gains. Now, hold on to that word daily. Daily gains and losses that can be up to maybe three times greater than the index. Now, the big thing there is they're designed to emulate the daily movement, not the multi-day movement. Now, the daily movement may not track either, but they're designed to be daily multiplying, levered against some index. Now, if in fact the SEC actually approves this rule, it may create an unworkable strategy by some of these funds because they could only, according to this rule, lever by about 150%. So the three time is obviously three times. So 1.5 times is not three times. And all of a sudden, what's going to happen with these funds? They're going to have to either change what they're doing or close. Also force them to hold a lot more cash to cover potential losses. And it's one of the most aggressive, clearly one of the most aggressive responses that we've seen from regulators yet, who have really looked to ramp up security scrutiny and the security of investors inside this particular, we'll call it sector or style. So this is very interesting. And I wonder, I'm kind of scratching my head, where are the opportunities here? If we see that this law goes into place, is it going to be just, okay, on this day, boom, it's done? Or is it going to be more so of a gradual process? You know, by June of 2016, you need to make sure that you have no more than 150% leverage and, you know, govern yourself accordingly because as of that date, you can't do it any longer. Are the funds then going to be liquidated, closed, changed? What's going to happen to the underlying portfolio if all of a sudden there's a run on these assets because there is a potential law that's out there? Interesting to look at. But again, I've talked about this several times. You need to make sure to consider this as a warning that we've done about the potential degradation of the valuation of your portfolio if you hold these things for an extended period of time for those particular levered ETFs that don't fare well in volatile markets or choppy markets, we'll call it, or sideways markets. So just keep that in mind. The other thing I'll mention to you is that when we talked to Frank Curzio last week, he has some great insight on a variety of different stocks, also on the oil industry. Great discussion. I mean, fantastic discussion on the oil industry. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, you got to listen to it. We talked about the whole Kinder Morgan issue, Freeport, etc. Talked about some great ideas and some areas that may bounce if oil stabilizes. You need to keep those on your radar. You need to watch those closely or else these things will run away from you if, in fact, they get the right punch. If they get this nice bounce, it's going to be quick and it's going to be furious. So just keep a watch on that. Other than that, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz. One word on Twitter. And of course, email me, as I mentioned earlier, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We got Das coming up, I believe, next week. We're going to do some year-end discussion with him and wrap up the year for one of your favorite guests of all time, which is Das. Great guy and really insightful on all things related to markets and commentary about what's going on, about the credit and upcoming issues when it comes to world and economic growth and strategy from governments. We'll talk about that with him. And we'll wrap it up with some year-end ideas as well. So make sure to tune into that and to make sure to get all you can. Also listen to DH Unplugged each and every week. We talk about all sorts of really great things and pretty hysterical items regarding the business environment. Myself, John C. Dvorak, talk on Tuesday nights and publish it, get that out there late Tuesday night. You can listen to it on iTunes or wherever else that you find your podcasts, RSS feeds, etc. DHUnplugged.com is where you can find information and listen to it. If you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, might I strongly suggest that you do so. I think there's some pretty funny things that happen there. And we cover a lot of bases, a little bit different than we do here, a lot different than we talk here. Plus, we track some stocks that we are talking about and things that we are thinking that maybe have a nice opportunity. And we track that each and every week, and we give suggestions to this game that we play of stocks that may really pop or drop. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will get with you next week and a full episode talking about all things regarding the finance and a recap, of course, of what happens with the Fed and kind of how it fares this week. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing. We'll be right back.